House Bill Number 1036.
Test 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2.
For that reason, we introduced the
last session. Since that time, of course, the press has been most generous with the coverage of the concept, and gigantic public support developed for a 5-cent return on beverage containers. When the bill didn't pass in last session, as you recall, the Speaker appointed an interim committee to study the problem in greater depth and proposed another solution for this session in 1971. The committee on rules and resolutions broke into two parts, one part considering solid waste disposal and the litter problem in Oregon generally. And the bulk of the work was done by a 5-man subcommittee chaired by Representative Gordon McPherson from Walport. Representative McPherson's committee produced this study, which is in a limited supply at the present time, but the fantastic demand for copies of that report indicate the interest, I think, therein. It was a year and a half study that went into great depth in the problems, even the emotional and psychological problems of who litters in Oregon, and I think that that had to be determined partly before the committee could recommend its solutions. The committee recommended solutions in a similar appearing book labeled Legislative Measures. One of those is 1036, which you have before you today. I just want to indicate in closing that, and I think that some of the other people who follow will do likewise, but some very substantial recent polls have been taken that indicate the support for the 5-cent provision. One of those, such as this one, and I only use it for an example, is AAA, which in Oregon completed a poll or is nearing completion, 8-1 in favor of a 5-cent return, and that includes several questions asked and several of the alternatives. I think that people believe that we need this approach because they believe that a major portion of the total litter problem is beverage containers. If you don't start from that premise, then there isn't much purpose for the bill. You start from the premise that this is a major segment of the total litter problem, and a gigantic portion of that major segment is the non-degradable sort of container that is going to stay with us for 10, 20, 50, 100, and 200 years. It's this that the committee spoke to when it produced, by near unanimous approval, the report that came out of the interim and is before you today. We accept the philosophy that our society is not so affluent that we cannot revert to the returnable container. And this is a premise that many of us have accepted. Following me are some of the speakers who are going to tell you in more specific detail the various facets of how the 5-cent deposit works on beverage containers, who it affects in Oregon. As a matter of fact, a speaker from British Columbia on how it's working there in the first province or state in North America where it's presently in effect. And I would hope, Mr. Chairman, that perhaps you might extend the 5-minute time limit to him for his part of the testimony, if in fact you make any exceptions to the rule. So again, my comments have been introductory primarily, and I don't wish to belabor you further. If there are any questions, I would hope that you bear in mind that some of the technical data will be covered by subsequent speakers.
Thank you, Paul. You went 15 seconds over the time. We'll make an exception. Are there questions for Representative Hanneman? If not, thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Call now on Representative Gordon McPherson.
Gentlemen, just very briefly, I want to say that this little booklet that has is this. In 18 months, this committee took 219 man hours and interviewed 143 witnesses on the subject of litter in Oregon, visited some 20 counties in Oregon and talked with county commissioners, solid waste disposal people, police who enforce the litter laws, and I don't think of anything or anybody that left unturned or untalked to. In 1969, I have to give Representative Hanneman credit. He brought this bill to us in 1969. I thought it was a good concept, and so did many others. It didn't make it in 1969, and I think basically one of the reasons it didn't make it in 69 was because of the promises of the industry that they could, if given the chance, take care of their own problems. That industry had the capability of educating the public. The public could be educated not to litter. And with that philosophy in mind, that giving them the chance of solving their own problem and educating the public not to litter, they were given a two-year moratorium, and an interim committee was appointed to study the problem. Shortly thereafter, the promises that I suppose you could say were made in 1969 began to come true. First of all, the committee, after studying it, began to believe that education was fine, but it was not the answer, and that it could not be done. You cannot educate the general public not to litter, because probably less than 10% or 15% of the general populace litter. And that percentage of the general populace is ineducated. You can't teach them anything. As a matter of fact, two good examples of the failure of organizations to educate people not to do things are those which are trying to educate us now not to smoke because it may be injurious to our health, which has not really been a very successful campaign and affects the individual almost the most personally of anything that I can think of. And secondly, is the Don't Drink and Drive campaign, which also has been a relative failure. So the promises were made in 1969, and you have a right to ask, were they kept? In January of 1970, this magazine called Soft Drinks, which is the National Bottlers Gazette, shortly 6 months after the adjournment of the session, said, in a campaign already begun in 8 southern market areas and timetabled to go national in May, the Glass Container Manufacturers Institute will be spending $7.5 million in 1970 to promote sales of soft drinks in one-way bottles. We became concerned about this, and we began to try to find out whether or not industry was keeping faith with the promises that they had made, in essence, to the legislature in 1969. Next thing that appeared around Oregon were billboards advertising one-way, no-deposit bottles in very bold type. So there was a lull then during the period of time in which the interim committee began to study this question, and there was a back and forth, give and take, testimony before the committee. And then, interestingly enough, before this legislative assembly took up, we saw all kinds of large newspaper ads, and we saw some almost overnight efforts at recycling and recycling stations. And then we saw some attempts at messages on cans, and in particular, I refer to the Olympia Brewery and some of the others which have embossed in the top of the can. If you happen to notice it in passing, it says, please don't litter. And on the glass, it says, in the same color as the glass, and embossed along the bottom, if you happen to see it as you're throwing it out the car window, please don't litter. And these were industry's efforts, with one exception. Glass Container, the Glass Bottle Blowers Association, who are the only people that I feel that I can come before you and pat on the back, and that's the union organization in Portland, Oregon, who have really made an attempt, even though we disagree on the solution to this problem, have really made an attempt to do anything about litter in Oregon. So, from that point, where do we go? The committee said there is only one way to stop the proliferation of one-way containers in Oregon, and that not to legislate what people can't do by not throwing it out, but to give them an incentive not to do it. And the incentive has to be high enough that they will either not throw it out, or it has to be high enough that they will pick it up. John Passantini proved that we think, when he put out his ad for half cents. He's here today, and he may testify, I'm not sure, and he can tell you whether or not he feels he proved that. He has some mixed feelings about this himself. Just let me leave you with this thought. If you have any mixed feelings about it, I would say to you that, as Representative Hanneman did, that you have the general public behind you in this concept of returning to returnable. As he pointed out in a membership poll by the AAA of Oregon, it was 8-1 in favor of returning. Mr. Passantini's poll, which he just finished conducting, and I hope that he'll tell you about, people were 78% in favor of banning all one-way bottles and cans. And they were 74% in favor of a 2 to 5 cent deposit on all these containers. And in addition, you're going to be in good company if you adopt this philosophy. You'll be in good company with such editorial support as the Register Guard, the Oregon Statesman, Corvallis Gazette Times, the East Oregonian, the Oregonian itself, and the Capital Journal, all who have supported this concept, and with good reason and with good logic in these editorials, which I'd be happy to furnish to you. We did not give this just a quick look and a quick glance. We studied this for a long time. We studied the loss of jobs concept, which I'll be happy to talk to the committee about later after these other people have had a chance to talk in our work session. I want to discuss with you the loss of jobs concept. We've talked with the minister from British Columbia, and I understand there's a man here today from the province to testify. I talked to Minister Kiernan about the 2 cent concept in Canada. He likes it. He thinks it's working. And I can just leave you with this thought, gentlemen. Minister Kiernan told me that the Social Credit Party had been in power in British Columbia for 16 years. And he felt that the people of British Columbia wanted a deposit on containers. He felt they wanted it so badly that he said, we passed that law because we want the Social Credit Party to remain in power for another 16 years. No matter which side of the aisle you happen to be on, you might consider that concept.
Thank you, Gordon. Questions for Representative?
In Denmark, without alluding to your last one, Gordon, how much study was given to the 5 cents? There are other explorations of other figures besides 5 cents. Does that really make much difference?
Well, I have to admit to you that it was one of those arbitrary decisions that was made by the committee. The decision to go with the deposit concept was not arbitrary, but we would have liked to have gone to 10 cents. We did not feel that we could justify 10 cents on all non-returnable items. You may find that there are other compromises that you would like to make on the concept. The 2 cents was discussed as was passed in British Columbia. We finally settled at 5 cents on being the value, which would prompt people either one not to throw it out or two.
Thank you very much. Representative Norma Paulus.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy, members of the committee. I, too, will try to be brief. If there are many people here with lots of good things to say in support of this bill. I would like to direct my remarks, not entirely, but to not a really different philosophy, but a different approach to this problem. I don't really view it as a litter problem, because I feel that if all the bottles, non-returnable bottles and cans that are presently littering our beaches and highways, if all of those bottles were placed in our garbage cans, I still think this bill would be justified, because I view the problem that it would help solve as a solid waste problem. I have just a few statistics here, and I can get you many, many more, which is from the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare that's just about 6 months old relating to the solid waste problem. And with your indulgence, I'd like to give you just a few. First of all, the collection and disposal of waste materials costs us about $4.5 billion a year. And the volume of waste is growing at a staggering rate. And right today, the statistic is that we have 5 3/10% pounds for each American every day, and by 1980 it's going to be 8 pounds. The cost of removing the waste is growing faster. And today the packaging industry, with such strong consumer appeal and a boon to convenience, is just accelerating the problem. Glass and metal packages are two of the worst packaging problems. And it is the conclusion of the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare that there are really only two possible solutions to this problem. One is the use of high-temperature incinerators. They're very costly. And the other one is greater use of money-back returnable containers in place of throwaway containers. Now, in the latter case, the American consumer and taxpayer could not only help relieve the problem, but he could save himself money in the process. In 1970, this department estimated that if all soft drinks were purchased in returnable money-back containers, American consumers would save an estimated $650 million. Now, there is in the audience a man that's very knowledgeable about the solid waste problems in Oregon. He is John Anderson, who is the Director of Public Works for Salem. And if you have any questions during the course of this afternoon regarding solid waste problems in Oregon, I would ask you to direct your questions to him because he's knowledgeable and articulate about the problem. With the emphasis on solid waste, I would also like to tell you that our three county commissioners, Marion County Commissioners, unsolicited sent us a letter, each representative, asking that we support this bill, not on litter, not on the basis of litter, but on the basis of the growing solid waste problem in Marion County, and that they recognize that recycling is one of the real threats towards solving this bill, or this problem. I'd like to add a little bit to Representative Pearson's comments about the big push by industry. I've long been offended by ads such as this, which I view as a red herring. It's an attempt on the part of the industry to divert the public's attention and to make the public and legislators think that they are solving the problem when you know you aren't. The one that I find most offensive is one that appears that tells me that I can use my empty six-pack beer cans by using them as sock tubes in my husband's sock drawer. I would also, these are about $300 ads too. I would also like to suggest to you that even the Citizens Committee Solve is also really a diversionary tactic because it's financed by the very industries that are trying to, or will try to, defeat this bill. And as Representative McPherson says, the solution is not education about litter. The solution is this bill before you. I would also ask that you view any amendments to this bill with suspicion. And I would also ask that you, if you change the refund value, please change it upward and not below. And I would also suggest to you that if this legislature doesn't pass this bill with at least a 5 cent refund value, we will be giving in to a very high-pressure lobby, and we know that it's necessary. It's a logical and sensible step, and we certainly can tell from the people that are here today that the public is clamoring for it, and as Representative McPherson suggested, politically it can be very attractive. So I would urge that you pass the bill out with the new pass recommendation as it stands today. Thank you.
Norma, can I ask you a personal question? How many pairs of socks does your husband have? About a half a case. Now, Representative Densmore has a question.
Norma, you did work
because I think that at 5 cents it will work. Now, I'm not certain of this, but I think that the gentleman from British Columbia has some comments to make about that. And since they have already tried it, I think his testimony would be more pertinent. But I would view an amendment to reduce the price as the tactic on the part of the industry to make the major effect.
And Howard?
Chairman,
against litter. It's an informal committee. I was asked the other day, who was this committee? Here are over 2,500 names of people who have joined our organization in the last 2 weeks. We are basically a citizen group. We started with a small group of people trying to determine what was the best solution to a problem. And we have finally come to the agreement that House Bill 1036 was the way to go. I would like to ask Mr. Chairman that some deference be given. We have tried to combine a lot of testimony under me to cover some of the economic factors we think are relevant. Let me say this, that we do not intend this bill as a panacea to the litter problem or preserving Oregon's environment. Rather, it is one string to the bow. It's a very significant string, solving the problem of litter on our highways, lakes, streams, and beaches. Sale of non-returnable containers doubled from 1958 to 1966, and it is expected to more than double by 1976. Estimates indicate that bottles and cans constitute somewhere between 49% and 82% of all the non-degradable litter. The opponents of this measure have in the past contended that the measure is unsatisfactory because it only deals with a portion of the litter problem. They point to the fact that paper products constitute approximately 50% of all litter. The argument is untenable. Paper products are degradable and leave little residue, while metal and glass will stay with us forever. Anyone, I think, who is familiar with the environmental problems of our country knows that if we're going to halt deterioration of our environment, Americans are going to have to change their living habits, in particular, their habits of consumption. House Bill 1036 is a forthright attempt to bring this about. Oregon is in a unique position to attempt this social experiment because the impact on our economy from the standpoint of jobs and profits will be minimal. I cannot state with certainty that House Bill 1036 will end the littering of cans and bottles. Likewise, no one can say that it will not. The laws of human behavior would indicate that the bill should work, because we are creating an economic motivation for the public to clean up its own litter. The consumer is enticed by the 5-cent refund to return the container. If he throws away the can or bottle, then he is penalized. His neighbor, however, stands to earn 5 cents by picking up the discarded bottle and turning it in for refund. Likewise, our own experience right here in Oregon indicates that a refunding system will work. Indeed, it worked for many years in this country before the non-returnable container came into existence. Today, it works in most European and other countries. Mr. John Buckley, who is with me from British Columbia, will testify that it is working in British Columbia. I do not believe that there are feasible alternatives. In the state of Vermont, for example, Vermont tried the approach of having an outright ban on all returnable type containers. This did not work because, as I understand it, the industry then just simply turned around and basically, I guess it was the retailers, and refused to grant a refund on even the returnable type container. So in effect, they made the returnable container a non-returnable. That bill did not work. A tax on cans and bottles would have to be prohibitive if it were to pay the entire cost of cleanup in this state. I'd like now to cover some of the economic aspects of this bill. See if I can't allay some of the fears that we will hear. Now, I think at the outset, there's no doubt the use of returnable bottles will have an adverse effect on certain segments of Oregon's beverage industry. I don't think there's any use in kidding ourselves that it's going to hurt the bottle industry, the bottle manufacturer, and the can manufacturer. I think, though, as a starting point, we ought to recognize how the market works today. A returnable beer bottle costs 4 cents new, and at present makes an average between 5 trips and 19, depending on whose estimate you use. We understand from Blitz Weinhardt is it's 5 trips. Your interim committee found that it was 19 trips. A one-way beer bottle costs 3 cents and makes 1 trip. A returnable 6.5 cent Coke bottle costs approximately 10 cents new. It is estimated that a Coke bottle also makes 19 trips. A one-way Coke bottle costs about 4.5 cents. It's been difficult for us to secure the facts about the economics of distribution of beer and soft drinks. But our information indicates that the beer distributor, for example, charges the retailer a 1 cent deposit on each bottle. In other words, 24 cents a case. When a customer buys a case of returnable bottle, 1 cent deposit is then passed on to him by the retailer. When he returns the bottle, he gets his 1 cent back. The retailer then sells the empty back to the brewery for 2 cents. And we've been advised the reason for this extra penny going back to the brewery is because to take care of the retailer's costs in handling. But in any event, the net cost to the brewery is 2 cents, which is substantially less than the 4 cents which you would have to buy to pay for a new bottle. Of course, a portion of that 2 cents is used to pay the additional handling and washing costs that the brewery would have to incur. Now, what will House Bill 1036 do to the industry affect it? Well, to the best of our knowledge, there are only two manufacturers in the state of Oregon that would be affected. First is Continental Can Company, which is, to our information, is the only manufacturer of beverage cans in this state. The total production of that plant, 20% of its capacity, is for beverage cans that would be affected by this bill. We assume that some of this 20% of their production, whether it's empty or filled, is exported outside of Oregon. The plant has 254 employees. Owens, Illinois is the only manufacturer of glass beverages in Oregon. It has 400 employees. 75% of its production is presently in one-way bottles. Likewise, we assume that some of this production is for export out of the state. We are also advised the plant is easily convertible to returnable bottles. But as I said earlier, we should not kid ourselves that it is going to have, that this bill would have an adverse effect on these two plants in Oregon. I think we should also recognize where the principal opposition to this bill is going to come from. It is going to come from some large national can and bottle manufacturers who, of course, do not want to see this law go into effect in Oregon or anywhere else in the nation. Let's look at the brewers and the bottlers. Blitz Weinhardt is the only brewer in Oregon, and to the best of our information, there are somewhere between 33 and 35 bottlers of soft drinks. There is no doubt that there will be an increase in cost of having to hire more drivers to bring in the returnables and more workers to sort and wash the bottles. There should be a corresponding increase in employment. It's difficult to calculate what would be the increase in employment in as much as there are great differences between bottlers throughout the state. It's likewise difficult to estimate if the savings in the cost of the containers would offset the cost of increased payroll, but I think I think it would be reasonable to assume that it would. Let's look at the retail. Undoubtedly, House Bill 1036 will put an increased cost on him to handle, sort, and store the empty returnable bottle. The estimates range from 1/4 to 1.5 of an employee per store. There appears to be conflicting opinions as to whether the price at which the beer distributors and soft drink bottlers repurchase the bottle is sufficient to pay for the increased cost to the retailer. That's the one penny that I was talking about earlier. We have, however, been informed that at least one large chain store does make money on its returnable bottle business.
I've also been advised there are certain retail stores who use returnable empties as a loss leader in inducing customers to return to the store. Certainly the retailer is going to, the effect on the retailer is going to increase the number of jobs rather than decrease. It and correspondingly will increase costs, but are those costs offset by the return sales on the bottle? If there is any increased cost on the retailer or the bottler in this state, it certainly has got to be minimal. And I think one thing we ought to consider in this bill, because undoubtedly you will hear testimony that these industries are being singled out. Well, I see no justification for that comment. When I look at the kind of money that this state is requiring other industries to spend to take care of their environmental problems. Look at the type of the millions of dollars, for example, that the pulp and paper industry has had to spend in the last few years. What is the economic effect on the consumer? Well, I think it's safe to say that the returnable bottle is the cheapest container for the consumer. The cost per drink of beer or soda pop is less. On February 13, 1971, we went to Fred Meyer's to see what it would cost for a six-pack of Blitz beer. If you take the returnable container, the 11-ounce container, you have it, the price was $1.11, the deposit was 6 cents, so you have a net price of $1.05. In comparison to that, a six-pack of non-returnable bottles was $1.12, a six-pack of cans is $1.28. It's interesting to note that even the leaders of the beverage industry have expressed opinions as to the superiority of the returnable bottle. Theodore Rosenack, president of Rheingold Breweries, on October 16, 1970, said, and I quote, "The returnable bottle brings its contents to the consumer at a lower true cost than does the metal can or a non-returnable bottle. The consumer saves money." Mr. J. Paul Armstrong, president of Coca-Cola Company, said in September of 1970, "And even though it is far more economical for consumers to buy our products in these returnable packages, some of our dealers, supermarkets, and convenience stores find it more desirable to handle one-way bottles and cans." In summary, the non-returnable bottle is a hidden tax on the consumer. First, the consumer must pay more when he purchases a non-returnable container. Secondly, he pays the garbage collector to take it away. Third, he has to either pay taxes to have it cleaned up or have his environment desecrated. And I think that's the basic issue that comes out of House Bill 1036. We have also tried to comment on some of the other incidental economic effects. I don't think there's any question about it that if the present trend in the industry, both in the brewing industry and in the soft drink industry, continues, that most of our small distributors in this state will eventually be forced out of business. Whereas if House Bill 1036 is passed, that will not happen. I would like to answer try to answer the question of why we should stick at 5 cents. I don't think that the experience that we have had with respect to the Plaid Pantry or even the beer distributor in Bend, who in both cases got tremendous returns of bottles at a half-cent return value, is an indication of what is going to happen in the future. Undoubtedly, in those two programs, we saw an emotional response, but I can't imagine that type of emotional response is going to continue forever. I think you've got to create a real market to bring that bottle back in. And I think the testimony that you will hear from British Columbia is that the one problem they're having to British Columbia today is getting the returnable back, because the 2 cent refund is just not enough. Why do we select a nickel? I'm not certain why the committee selected a nickel, but I am convinced from the economic information that we have gotten, that it is at a level which does not detrimentally affect the economics of the industry, and yet at the same time creates a sufficient incentive for people to return those bottles. I think you could probably go quite a bit higher without destroying the economics of the industry, but I certainly think you would make a mistake if you went less, because I don't think you'll have the incentive, the long-term incentive that you need to return those bottles. Let me answer your question.
You ran a little over your time, Mr. Johnson.
That's normal.
In view of your office's procedure charging the legislature some X amount of dollars per hour, we're going to submit a bill of $5 to you.
I wish to make it clear, Mr. Chairman, that I appear in my capacity as a private citizen here today.
We'll call you Mr. instead of General. Any questions for Mr. Johnson? No, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I would at this time like to introduce Mr. John Buckley, who is the assistant to Mr. Kenneth Kiernan, who is the Minister for Conservation and Recreation of British Columbia. Mr. Kiernan was going to come here at our request himself, but unlike our government, he is not only a member of the executive, but also a member of the legislative body, and they are in session. He was unable to attend, but it's been very kind to attend, Mr. Buckley.
Mr. Buckley, it's a pleasure to have you here with us. We appreciate very much your coming from Canada to visit with us. That was Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Buckley. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to correct one statement made by a person, if I may, and that is in reference to the length of tenure of our particular government. 19 years as of this session.
And you're looking for another 19 instead of 16.
I would also like to state that as a member of the Civil Service of British Columbia, I am tagged with having earned my BSC. That means I've been in the service for over 19 years, since before social credit. However, I bring to you the greetings from Mr. Kiernan, and I'm bringing to you, at his request, our government's experience concerning litter abatement, in the hope that it will be of some value to you in your deliberations. I must make it clear that in no way are the following conclusions intended to interfere with your normal government process. It may be that during your deliberations, you will arrive at quite different conclusions. I would like to bring to your attention, however, perhaps a selfish outlook as far as our intent to put an act into use, and that is, we firmly believe that it would be very futile of us to clean up our own environment if, and I don't say this pointedly at any one particular area, if we have dirty neighbors who bring their garbage and drop it on our shores. As an example, I would like to show you and present as evidence a colored photograph of some 10,000 non-returnable bottles which were picked up from one of our provincial campsites in a two-month period in the summer of 1970. I know very well that the minister and his would very much like to have been here, because he has been very adamant in his thoughts that our own act should be put through. But British Columbia's Litter Act is a statute related to litter problems of the outdoors and was not intended to encompass the more sophisticated problems of, say, sanitary systems. It does, however, cover more than just the question of non-returnable versus returnable bottles, the use of glass versus metal containers, and the need for deposits and or refunds of whatever amount. In its scope, it covers the littering of Crown lands and the disposal of domestic waste in their many forms, from campers, trailers, boats, and other recreational vehicles, either on land or in fresh water. However, Section 3, as it relates to cans and bottles, is of course of our interest here today. The long-term thinking of the government of British Columbia and the idea uppermost in the mind of my minister is that society cannot go on scattering hard or soft garbage at an ever-increasing rate. The consensus is that some forms of convenience packaging is merely a process of transferring inconvenience from the food merchant on one hand to the consumer on the other, and in doing so, this solves absolutely nothing. The act is, in part, aimed at getting across the idea that merely because there is no litter can or receptacle handy, this is no excuse for indiscriminate discarding of garbage by our present affluent society. It was initiated, too, with the thought of doing something with just one segment of the problem, the indiscriminate disposal of non-returnable soft drink and beer containers, because this was a rapidly growing, shameful factor of which the general public of British Columbia was growing more and more conscious. It was our conclusion that this was a case where change was not necessarily progress, since it had never been considered by the general public that the merchandising of products in returnable bottles was an unsatisfactory procedure. Beer sales in non-returnable cans had captured about 3% of our beer market, indicating that inroads had been made into the previous stronghold of the returnable bottle. A rapid increase of the one-way bottle and can as containers for soft drinks continued to rise to the point where a public outcry arose against their use. In considering legislation, the government did not wish to bar the use of any type of package, but nevertheless planned to take this step as a last resort. It was hoped that legislation would develop a trend to revert to the use of returnable bottles, and it was, in its original form, suggested that a refund of at least 5% or 5 cents be payable on all returned containers. The 5 cent return was deemed necessary to ensure the return of the bottle to the processor and to bring about the lessening of the litter problem. It was the opinion of my minister that a movement in this direction would force the discontinuation of cans within a short time. Eventually, a 2 cent refund was established on the smaller sized bottles and cans, which was in effect a compromise to ensure approval of the measure before the House. Since enactment, it has been found that where the 5 cent refund applies, in the case of the larger bottles, a trend has developed to a growth in the use of the larger size bottle and almost total elimination of the smaller size. Whether this is governed by the convenience of the more or less standard-sized larger bottle, which incidentally frequently appears in the displays of the merchant, or whether it is the appeal in the eyes of the customer of a 5 cent refund, is a matter not known to us at this particular time. The basic concept of the need for this legislation was suddenly provoked by a TV commercial which advocated the use of the one-way bottle as a, quote, throw-away, unquote, bottle. Until then, the minister had resisted any action, in spite of requests from many sources, including farmers, outdoor clubs, recreation groups, and many others. In other words, the advocating of garbage conjured up by a TV commercial was the last straw. The minister forthwith brought in the bottlers to solicit their help in doing away with such questionable advertising, which indirectly advocated the throwaway bottle and he made it clear that nothing would cause the government to deviate from its course until such advertising had disappeared. I might say at this point that the cooperation of the bottlers, the canners, and the retailers throughout has been and still is a source of satisfaction to our government. And many briefs were presented in the early stages of the legislation suggesting education of the public. I believe you have had similar briefs here of the use of imprints on cans and bottles, but our minister felt that this was just not good enough. The Honorable Mr. Kiernan personally drafted the bill in what he terms layman's language, in order that it would be entirely clear to the general public. He endeavored always to keep its construction simple, and the bill was placed before the House and was passed subject to proclamation. Our laws in Canada, perhaps a little different from yours, at proclamation the law was there, it was on the books, but not enforced until such time be done enforced by regulation, which would be introduced by order in council. Done in this way because it was intended to introduce the act section by section. Now, flexibility was provided in the regulations under the act and presented the means for industry to get in line with the principles spelled out in the original section 3 of the act, which stated quite clearly that the onus to refund was on the retailer. In other words, if no refunds were to be made, no sales could go through. Upon passage of the act by the legislature, provision was made for repeated consultations by the minister with all facets of the industry. At these meetings, the minister took note of industry's objections, and in the subsequent drafting of the regulation, these objections were considered and were alleviated insofar as they did not change the basic concept. Flexibility was allowed in terms of time, but never in terms of principle. Several amendments to the original regulations were made before final passage. Some were made after what almost became a battle between the bottlers and the canners. To circumvent the trend toward the use of cans versus the returnable bottles, the minister had advocated freezing the production of the canners of soft drinks at the 1969 level. He also emphasized that he would freeze the output of those existing plants. In other words, the plant operating 5 days a week with an 8-hour shift was limited to follow that pattern from then on. He also emphasized that he would freeze the output, the total output annually of the existing plants. And if this step had been taken and had been accepted by the industry, cans would not have been included under the refund concept. In other words, refunds would have been required on returned bottles, but not on the cans. The natural result of this, the bottle industry stood up and cried discrimination. The minister responded by stating that the bottler should consider this demand, their demand of equality, very, very carefully, and that if the limit on the manufacture of soft drinks in cans was lifted, and an equivalent deposit were paid for the return of cans, that no further request for special consideration could be given to the bottlers. The minister realized that the bottlers would face strong competition for the so-called convenience packaging of cans. Although the major outcry was against the one-way bottle because of the hazard of breakage and litter, the same does not entirely hold true insofar as cans are concerned. Objectionable they may be insofar as litter is concerned, but a discarded can has not the potential danger of broken glass and in some cases will eventually rust away. This is not counting aluminum cans. After passage of the act, it was evident that the swing to beer in the can, which had been underway, was now diminishing. And one concern about this trend toward the can was, are we going to have history repeat itself, as in the soft drink trade, where the can made inroads on the returnable bottle, and the non-returnable bottle appeared as a competitive response to the can? While we have no conclusive evidence that this process was imminent, being aware of what had taken place with soft drinks, under no consideration whatsoever did we want the one-way bottle in the beer trade. During the discussions with the industry, the minister was asked if the regulations would allow the canners to set up a non-profit organization to act as a collector of empty cans, which would be prepared for eventual recycling back to the base metal. This suggestion was provided for in the original act because in British Columbia, it was the accepted and traditional method of the returning of beer bottles. But the original intent of the act remained intact in that the retailer was still obligated to refund on the kind or kinds of containers he sells or offers for sale, but may limit this obligation to a maximum of 18 cans per customer per day and suggest that the balance, if any, be taken to a reclamation depot. Pacific Reclamation Limited in Vancouver now operates a network of depots throughout the province, and once some minor kinks are removed from the procedure, the return system will, we firmly believe, work to everyone's satisfaction. As a short-term guesstimate, we in Canada visualize some 400 million units per year from the beer and soft drink trade, which, left to its own devices, could in a few years have forced the reusable, returnable bottle out of existence and left our society with 400 million pieces of hard garbage to dispose of. We have heard at this hearing mention of the number of times a returnable bottle returns to the plant. Our investigations have shown that this goes anywhere from 4 to the figure quoted here today of 19. And I think it is graphically illustrated if we even imagine that that returnable bottle makes one trip back to the plant to be refilled, we have cut the possibility of 400 million units down to 200 million, which is a sizable decrease in the amount of hard garbage. We do not see the necessity for this trend. However, history alone will tell whether or not public support is sufficiently strong to halt the trend in this affluent society to create ever-increasing piles of garbage requiring disposal. We believe it can be done, and this is our objective. And with a thought to what we may do in the future, our act has only been fully in operation since the 1st of January. We have already seen some shortcomings. And we feel that perhaps the only true answer to this particular problem, which is pointed out to us by the success we have had in the past, generally speaking, with our returnable beer bottles, where all of our breweries except one has a standard bottle, that we feel that perhaps the only answer as far as soft drinks are concerned is a standard returnable soft drink bottle. We do also feel that our regulations will have to be rewritten. Although the minister does not intend to open the act at this session of the legislature, we fortunately meet every year, and it is the minister's intention, I do believe, and I know hitting his list of possible corrections, is that there will be inclusion of a regulation that will state that it will be against the law in British Columbia to manufacture a soft drink or beer can that comes apart upon opening. The minister also wishes to make it quite clear that he relinquished his original thought of a 5-cent deposit very, very regretfully. And he feels that when our act is reopened, if and when it is reopened, that he will insist on a deposit of at least 5 cents per returnable bottle. And it's very gratifying, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, to have been invited to appear before this hearing. And I thought that it might be of interest to you and the people here assembled that although British Columbia is not completely aware of the effects of its act, it is encouraging that we have started. It's encouraging to know that our neighbors to the south of us, such as yourselves, have asked us to give you some indication of how we have progressed. And I might also add that we have also received requests from not only other states in the United States,
but also from our own province of Ontario, who is also intending to put in similar legislation. I'd be very pleased, Mr. Chairman, to answer to the best of my ability any questions your hearing might put before me.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. We would like very much if you could have a copy of your statement. Could you leave that with us? We'll make a copy if you want to keep it. A photocopy and give you the original plan. I had a couple of questions. Have cans, and you covered part of this, have you noticed, or have you, maybe it hasn't had an effect on it, have cans and non-returnables gone down in use in British Columbia, or have they gone out of use?
It's a little early yet, Mr. Chairman, to give you an answer. For one reason, it's been rather difficult to measure, because the only sticks that we had to measure was last summer. Naturally, beer sales are up during that season, back soft drink sales are up. We're in midwinter now. It's rather difficult to say.
It has been mentioned by people, some people here, that it has been mentioned by people to me that one of the effects of this in Oregon, if we adopt the 5% deposit, might well be to economically price out those beers, especially that are brewed out of the state. We have national breweries that ship in from the Midwest or from the Los Angeles area. Of course, we have foreign beers like Heineken. Where are your breweries generally in British Columbia? Are they in British Columbia, or are these breweries, are you getting beer in from other provinces?
A little of both. But we've never had exactly the same problems you have here, because the percentage of beer in cans in British Columbia has always been very minimal. You don't have the same quantity or production of beer in cans. It's relatively new.
Well, on bottles, are there breweries that ship into British Columbia from other provinces in returnable containers?
Yes, there would be. But then there's still a standardized bottle.
Bottle doesn't have to go back to the original place.
In other words, we have Ontario beer, we have Montreal beer that would be imported into British Columbia, but it's in a bottle, we can use it.
We have some breweries such as Miller and Budweiser that have unique bottles.
Well, we have one. Outside of one brewery who has just initiated the new bottle style in British Columbia, which upset the apple cart, like you say, is Heidelberg, with the keg-type bottle, and it's the only one that's different.
But they do have a brewery in British Columbia. So that's, one thing I note in this picture, that there are a lot of non-returnables, but there's also a good number of returnable containers that were picked up here. And which leads me to the question, one of the questions that I have is, how do you fund your litter pickup in British Columbia?
This particular one here is the park, is a provincially operated park, and there'd be a natural maintenance crew in connection with each park. Along our highways, of course, is the charge against the environmental violations.
One of the, I think, deficiencies that's been uncovered in this whole study over the last 2 years is the Oregon Highway Commission, which is charged with the pickup on Oregon highways, hasn't spent as much money they perhaps should have. And one of my concerns is to find some way, some method of raising the revenues necessary. This deposit bill doesn't do that, but there are other bills that speak to it, to raise some money so that we can fund these cleanup agencies. Are there questions? Representative Howard?
The only one that we have any record on so far is the beer sales. I'm afraid I can't give you any figures with regard to what's happened yet with the ratio between the cans and bottles. It's too early yet.
Is beer sold in grocery stores?
No, it's not.
Just your own
outlet? It's sold through three different types of outlets. You can buy it at a government liquor store, the Liquor Commission. You can buy beer through the wholesale beer distributor who will deliver it to your door. Or you may purchase beer at a bar, a beer parlor of that nature, to take out. And you can buy it one bottle, two bottles, or a dozen bottles at a time.
Does the law require the
person
to charge
beer bottle?
2 cents
for the sale
of beer bottle.
Yes, the wholesale comes under control of the Liquor Control Board. It's all very closely watched under the Liquor Control Board. As I mentioned earlier, there is only one brewery that cans beer in British Columbia. This created a little bit of a problem. I don't know whether it would be of interest to you, Mr. Chairman. It might be. Naturally, when a government retails liquor, they have control of the price. When the canned beer was introduced into British Columbia, there was only one brewery offering canned beer. He claimed he could sell it at a cheaper price than the bottled beer. He applied to the Liquor Control Board to have the price of his beer reduced because the cans were non-returnable. Because when you buy liquor at the government liquor store, you automatically pay 25 cents a dozen deposit for the bottle you take your beer home in. And that is returnable when you return the bottle. But the cans, there was no return when the beer was first introduced. The brewer felt that he was losing part of his sales because he was having to be charged, or his customers were being charged the same price for a case of beer as a canned beer as the customer that bought a case of bottled beer and who had already paid 25 cent deposit. So he asked if he could have the price of his beer reduced 25 cents. This was turned down by the Liquor Control Board, and he went so far as to publicly acclaim by advertising that he would give 10 cents per dozen cans returned to him personally to help defray the cost, the difference in the cost of bottled beer and cans. The side issue.
One other question.
Go ahead. To refund on a bottle? No, the act is quite clear that he is only obligated to pay a refund on that kind or kinds of bottles he sells, be it bottles or cans. In other words, if he's carrying Pacific brand and somebody comes in with Atlantic brand cans, he doesn't have to pay
anything. Somebody's talking about the bottles, take them back, purchase them.
If he took it down to the depot, then it would be paid for at the depot.
Representative McPherson.
First of all, I want to thank you for coming down and asking you to give my regards to the minister who had treated me very royally when I was in Canada. But I do want to ask you a question. Do you have any glass container manufacturers in the British Columbia?
Yes, we do.
Do you know what the effect, if any, has been upon their employment? Jobs in those plants since the enactment of this?
It is only recently that any glass manufacturing plants were set up in British Columbia, and I don't believe they had established any real governable pattern as yet when the act came into effect. The president of the Glass Containers Council has advocated that the business of Canada, that the act, as far as British Columbia is concerned, was knock about $1.5 million off the income of the glass containers, and our minister looked upon this and said, well, that's $1.5 million worth of garbage that's not going to be produced. And he was referring here, of course, to the non-return.
Just one last question. Do you still require the Speaker of your House to wear that silly little black hat?
Yes, we do. I object to the word silly, if you don't mind.
Further questions? I want to also thank you very much again for coming. I think it's very helpful to us to be able to talk to someone who has the experience that you had in British Columbia and give a better insight, and I do appreciate your problem. I spent 4 days in Terrace, British Columbia, 4 years ago, and you drink a lot of beer in British Columbia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Now, we have gone through the list of those government people who are going to testify, and we're going to now move to those citizens who are here to testify. Again, I'd remind you there's quite a lengthy list. Please try not to be repetitious and let's keep it down. I will impose a 5-minute time limit on testimony. I'll call first on Richard Chambers.
My name is Rich Chambers. I live in Salem. I've lived here all my life. I am a citizen advocate of House Bill 1036. I sincerely hope that it will be passed in somewhat near its present form. I yield to the people that are coming from all over the state to talk about this. I would like to point out that I have a file right behind me there, 12 inches thick, gathered over the last 3 years. And at the end of your testimony, if at the end of hearings here today or subsequent hearings, if any of you have any questions, possibly I have the facts. Thank you very much.
Rich, thank you, and I appreciate your brevity. William Ellis. For the record, I would appreciate if each of you could state your name and your residence town. You don't have to give the street address.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Ellis. I'm the administrator of Penn Memorial Clinic, but I'm here today as president of PURE, Preserve Our Urban and Rural Environment, which is a citizens environmental group organized 3 years ago in Central Oregon, which now has over 1,100 members. We have been active in all aspects of waste disposal, spearheaded bond levy for sewage treatment plant in Bend, county levy for continued operation of landfill. So we're very concerned. We agree with Mrs. Wallace that litter should really be considered more from the viewpoint of solid waste than just as the unsightly litter that it is. Speaking as a resident of Bend, I would like to point out several things. Vince Piena, the head of our Parks and Recreation Department in Bend, went back to Washington, D.C. last week to receive a first prize award in the National Bureau City Beautification Contest. It's the first city of any size in the Northwest to win this award. Much of what won the award for Bend was the litter and cleanup campaigns that were conducted. Last spring, PURE and the Parks Department planned a series of litter cleanup campaigns. As was already mentioned by another speaker, meal distributors offered 25 cents for the return of every 24 cans or bottles. Over one weekend, 600,000 cans were turned in. Neil Distributing has budgeted $1,000 for the public relations.
And the 3 days cost them $3,200, so they had to holler, no more. We will take what you've already got in your pickups and bring them out to the city dump today, but no more. Speaking to the question that Representative Howard raised, I think that probably half the cans that were turned in, steel and aluminum cans, were dug up or picked up off of informal dumps all around the county, not on the roadsides. But I can also say that for the next 2 months, the litter pickup campaigns that PURE hoped to organize were very fruitless because the roadsides were so clean. I think our area is unique in the high percentage of people that have moved there for the attractive environment and to get away from unfavorable environment elsewhere. And they're very outspoken about how beautiful it is. But there are two times during the year when I think I would dearly love to see this law already in effect. That would be the day after the opening of fishing season and the day after the opening of hunting season. Both times, our highways are absolutely strewn with a parade of bottles. I think that the people that are in the fish and game area would also like to have me speak of one other point. In this measure is the question of the detachable opener, and I would hope that this provision would remain. I've asked a number of people recently, what do you think about taking that out of the bill? And they said, well, we know many people who don't throw the cans away, but the first thing they do when they open the bottle is throw the opener away. If they're fishing, or if they're out in the country, the opener is raising mayhem with fish and wildlife. In Central Oregon, we take a great deal of pride in the fact that Representative Sam Johnson and Senator Gordon McKay were members of the interim committee, which worked so long on the hearings on this bill and which authored the bill. And I'm sure that I speak for by far the majority in saying that we hope that it is passed in very much the way it is written. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ellis. Question? Grace Finney?
My name is Grace Finney, and from Corvallis, and I'm speaking for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We feel that the provisions in support of HB 1036, we feel the provisions of the bill will result in both aesthetic and economic advantages by reducing the amount of litter and solid waste, and that reuse and reclaiming procedures will be substituted for wasteful and unnecessary consumption. We consider it an excellent arrangement. We, too, would like to urge you to leave in the provision concerning pull tabs, and we also would support adding to this bill the same sort of requirement for deposits on alcoholic beverages that are in the Senate Bill 194. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Finney. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jerry McMinn. Gary? Jerry. Okay. It's a pleasant surprise.
Thank you. I'm Jerry McMinn, a housewife from Lake Grove, Oregon. I have only the feelings of my family to represent and to express here today. We think these feelings are well-reasoned, if a little despairing, but in support of House Bill 1036. We're a family that really enjoys all of Oregon, its beaches, the finest in the world, I'm sure you'll agree, the lakes and the mountains and the trails. We're active sailors. We love all of this great state. But just last November 1970, after several years of anti-litter education, just 3 months ago, our family was at the beach. We took along garbage liners on our walks at Beverly Beach. In just the space of half a mile, we filled these bags twice with the whole array of non-returnables that we see on our grocery shelves today. I resent this. This litter cancer is spreading unabated regardless of education and anti-litter slogans and campaigns and Earth Days. They have not made an appreciable difference. We need legislation. Therefore, your help. I don't believe a tax would work either. It wouldn't be effective in reducing litter because an individual could moralize he's already paid his tax for the pickup, so throw it away. Recently, we sailed to Lady Island up the Columbia opposite Corbett to camp overnight. The 1.5 miles of beautiful river beach on that island were a vast junkyard of cans and broken bottles. We could not walk 25 feet without stepping on either a piece of glass or a flip-top tab or a partially buried can. Therefore, there were literally piles of bottles and cans left from the previous afternoon water ski party or washed ashore by careless boaters. Education may be healthy, but our problem is far from solved. I don't know whether you gentlemen saw this ad that appeared in the paper not too long ago. The suggestion of the can industry that I can gather all of my cans, clean them, remove the labels, collect them in containers, and take them to a depot 10 miles away is an insult to my intelligence. To do this with 90 cans for probably a 5-cent value, maybe to charity, a trunk full of cans would not pay for the gas alone needed to transport the cans to this depot. And here again, I'd be putting 7 pounds of pollution into the air using my car. By the way, did you know that such an ad costs $3,200? One page ad for a 1-day run. At the bottom of their ad, they say, we care more than you do, we have to. From my observation of these facts, I believe that I care more about our Oregon environment than the can people do. And I have to, or I'm going to be living on top of a pile of their cans. I know, gentlemen, that you are hearing much from the can and the bottling people in opposition to this bill. But I also know that their prime concern is what goes into their pockets. As citizens of this beautiful state, I'm sure your interest is for our best environment for our people to live in. So therefore, I know I can put my trust in you to pass this bill, 1036. Thank you.
Thank you. Sure. Questions, Mr. Howard?
Mm-hmm.
When you went to the beach and you walked along and you picked up non-returnable bottles in these containers, what do you suppose happened to the returnable bottles that were on the beach?
I suppose they were taken back. I take mine back.
What do they get when they take them back?
Well, you get varying amounts, 5 cents, depending on the size of the bottle.
On a small bottle, they get 1 cent. And when you walk along
no,
that beach...
No, no. It's 2 cents and 5 cents, I believe, on the quart bottle.
Today, on a returnable...
It's a varying amount. I know that, depending on the size of the bottle.
But they are picked up today on the beaches. You picked up non-returnable bottles.
From that one instance, that's what I've noticed, yes. Mm-hmm.
Further questions? If not, thank you. Mrs. McMinn, I believe you said you were from Lake Grove.
Yes.
You signed up from Lake Oswego.
Well, all right, Lake Oswego.
I don't know. Is there...
I live closer to Lake Grove.
Which would be your address?
My address would be Lake Oswego, I guess, correctly.
Fine, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
John Liso.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Leso. I'm a student of the Northwestern School of Law in Portland. I speak as a concerned citizen and a student. I'd like to begin with a quote. Quote is, the campaign for throwaway bottles is temporarily stymied in Michigan, Vermont, and New Hampshire by refusal of authorities to revoke regulations requiring deposits on beer bottles. Opponents say that convivialists will clutter highways and create a hazard with their empties. Business Week, September 23rd, 1939. The wisdom of the opponents was not appreciated at that time, and the throwaway menace began. Today you are dealing with a bill which on its face would seem to be a bottle or a litter measure, but I contend that the ramifications of such a bill go much farther than the size of our highways and the stench of our dumps. You are dealing with one, a commodity that the citizens of Oregon have showed they do not want. I refer to the Plaid Pantry Survey, which I'm sure Mr. Piacentini will refer to in his testimony. I also refer to a Blitz-Weinhardt beer study in which over an 8-month period, non-returnable bottle sales dipped 21%, where returnable bottle sales rose by 11%. You are dealing in the case of glass bottles with a commodity whose price has increased 3 times in the past year, a price which has been passed along to the consumer. You are dealing with a commodity in which the packaging price, the price of the can or bottle, now exceeds the ingredient price. This is one reason I support the 5 cents. It costs between 4 and 6 cents, I believe, to manufacture the can that you dispose of after you'd consume the beverage. You are dealing with a commodity which requires vast amounts of energy to produce. The energy it takes to manufacture one non-returnable bottle is sufficient to light a 100-watt light bulb for a period of 4 hours. You are speaking of beverage bottles and cans, of which 250 million were discarded in the state of Oregon in 1966, a figure which will increase to 581 million in the year 1976. This is your subject, and the question is what to do about it. I think that what you're considering today is a solid step in the right direction. There are plenty of alternative answers. I submit that billboards which proclaim Oregon's too beautiful to end up ugly, please don't litter, are simply taking the problem from the side of the highway, putting it up on stilts, and lighting it up for everyone to see. I submit that educating the public is a failure, and that according to the Plaid Pantry Survey, 63% of those 5,000 people who sent in their replies were of the opinion that educating the public was not going to work. Recently, industry has conducted campaigns that are very limited in scope, but unlimited in the advertising which they propagandize. The question is, what are the basic trends? I offer to you a statement from the American Can Company's forecast. The shift to convenience packaging has exceeded all expectations. Convenience packaging is to non-returnable bottles and cans as sanitary landfill is to dump. In 1969, one-way bottles and cans are estimated to have captured 45% of the market, up from 5% in 1960. One-way bottles and cans are dominant in 70% of total sales in beer, which indicates the potential for growth that exists in the years ahead for soft drinks. On the one hand, we have industry proclaiming its concern, but then you have the economic trends which show that in 1966, 25 million returnable containers were available. That figure will decrease to 16 million by 1976, even though the public has shown that they prefer returnable type bottles. They have tried to give us answers in PAP legislation, such as the Model Litter Control Law, which was proposed in Washington. Here's some hard-hitting points from the Model Litter Control Law. 1, anti-litter messages on cans and bottles. 2, a requirement that all vehicles operating in the state carry litter bags. 3, stiffer fines. And the capper, the 4th, is a band of 40 ecology patrolmen to scour the state to find and fine the callous litterer. So the answers are, according to industry, more police, more arrests, more trash cans, and much more propaganda. The cost to industry, absolutely nothing. The cost to the public, a certain amount. The solutions, negligible, if any. The ACW conducted a survey in which they concluded that 66% of all highway litter was in the form of beverage containers. A little more microcosmic, if you will, but more relevant survey I found conducted by the Audubon Society. These items were found along a 1 mile of road, a two-lane highway in the state of Kansas. 770 paper cups, 730 cigarette packs, 590 beer cans, 130 pop bottles, 120 beer bottles, and 110 whiskey bottles. Over 1,000 pieces of solid waste for 1 mile of highway in Kansas. And you may say, now, Oregon is not like Kansas. Well, I submit people from Kansas, from California, from all parts of the country travel to Oregon. Well, they carry their habits with them. Some would advocate a tax on beverages to finance litter cleanup. What would this do? I believe it would spread the cost of litter pickup and disposal generated by the careless few to the entire population. Most people in Oregon do not litter, and I resent being taxed to pay for those who do. I wonder how much litter is generated by the carefree tourists who visit our state in increasing numbers. I, for one, resent the fact that I'm going to be taxed to pay for someone else's carelessness, especially if that someone else is a tourist from California. Last year, municipal refuse alone contained more than $1 billion worth of minerals. Minerals that will never again be reclaimed. The same refuse contain the equivalent of 1 billion trees. At this rate, by 1980, there will be more trees used than can be grown. This is from the latest issue of Newsweek magazine. There is presently legislation similar to House Bill 1036 before 25 legislatures, city councils, governmental agencies, what have you, 25 states of the Union, as well as the United States Congress. President Nixon, in his message on environmental quality, stressed the importance of reuse and recycling. Something must be done. The problem is moving rapidly from one of litter to one of mere resource management. I think 1036 is a practical solution to an exploding problem, and I would personally like to see Oregon be the first state to adopt a forward-looking proposal such as 1036. I would not like to see them bend before the propaganda and the proselytizing self-interest of the beverage industry, as was the case in Washington last year.
Thank you, Mr. Lissel. Mr. Densmore.
I just want to clarify one point. You said you don't want to pay a tax to pay for other people's litter. But aren't you asking for a bill so you can pick up his returnable bottle?
Oh, yes.
I want to clarify your logic.
I'm of the opinion that if I have to pay a tax, or everyone has to pay a tax, to finance litter cleanup per se, the attitude of the public in general, and especially the tourists who have to pay this, when they're visiting our state, would be one of, well, if I'm paying the tax, I might as well throw it away. I think this is pure human nature, and this will be the reaction.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Howard.
I suggest that you announce once again that we have a 5-minute limit. If we don't, we'll be here until midnight.
I apologize. You established that before I got here. But it's in force now. Gerald P. Marcello. And under instruction, sir, I'm watching the clock.
My name is Gerald Marcello. I'm a teacher in Prineville. I teach sixth grade there. I am here to support Bill 1036. During the year 1970, I took out quite a number of sixth grade students with me on litter pickup trips. During the year 1970, I personally collected over 73,000 bottles and cans from the roadsides, mostly in Central Oregon. This does not include returnables. This does not include another several thousand picked up by the sixth grade students themselves. I would like to cite the figures presented by the gentleman ahead of me, who quoted 1,000 metal and glass containers per mile. In Crook County, we have found at the most 1,600 bottles and cans per mile. This is, if you wish, about a bottle and can every 3 or 4 feet. At the most, I insist. We also did one test on one road quite close to Prineville. We collected from a mile all bottles and cans in April. In December, we returned and collected from that same mile 900 bottles and cans that had been deposited in that 9 or 10 months. I also figured out that I personally collected over 12,000 pounds, 6 tons, that is, of bottles and cans in 1970. This all ends up, most of it, in the Crook County dump, all of it in some dump. This is a tremendous waste of material. It's a tremendous waste of my time, of the students' time, of anyone's time to have to go out and collect all this garbage. I'd like to also point out that in Western Oregon here, the litter problem is not so obvious. Grass grows quickly. Deciduous trees shed their leaves over the litter. In central and eastern Oregon, the litter is much more obvious. The grass does not grow as quickly. There are few deciduous trees, and a can or bottle that is thrown out remains there exposed for years for everyone to see. In Crook County, we have the Rock Hound Powwow in July. We have a Crook County Fair in August, a Palina Rodeo in September. We have many tourists. They come, they litter, and so do the people from Crook County litter. But there are many people that come who want to see Central Oregon clean. Many local people want to see it kept clean. I repeat what several other individuals have said, that the educational aspects of the litter problem are not sufficient. They do not begin to touch the solid waste problem. I have taught for 5 years. The students that I had the first year are now in 10th grade. The high school and the junior high parking lots and the surrounding areas around these schools are probably the messiest places in town. The message has not gotten through to many of them. I have students in my class this year who I know come from families who litter. The students have already littered. They will continue to litter. They will not hear any message that we present to them. Education is not sufficient. I would like to close by pointing out this, that if House Bill 1036 is not passed, the result may be what I have read and what I am sure you have heard and read, that in X number of years, be it 20 or 40 or 100, the greatest resource in the United States will be the public dump. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Mr. Marcello? Thank you very much. Don Wagoner.
My name is Don Wagoner. I come as chairman of a recently formed People's Lobby Against Non-Returnables. I also speak for the Oregon Environmental Council. You can see by the flip charts that I came prepared for a much longer presentation, but I will endeavor to keep within the 5 minutes by not looking at a number of the material. We've worked for at least 2 months talking to every group that we could talk with and got many facts, and I hope that at some later time we'll be able to present them all. I would like to very briefly point out that one alternative which has been proposed, which is glass reclaiming, is working, but is working to a very, very limited extent. In January of this month previous, Owens, Illinois only received back 3% of their total daily production. The recent reclaiming, metal reclaiming program, which was proposed and proclaimed at great expense, in which they buy back cans in Washington at a half cent a pound or $10 a ton, yields 5 cents for the 90 cans which you see there, which I personally picked up from the side of the road and paid several cents apiece for the others. Now, I think this is rather important. I'll dwell on this a little bit more. Beer sales in Oregon during 1970, of the top 10 sales brands, can you read this? Okay, which totaled 95% of the total beer sales in Oregon, every single company which sold beer among the top 10 did in fact offer a returnable glass bottle in Oregon. The only one which did not was Bohemian Club, which is a basically Blitz anyway, and therefore they are quite capable, every single one of these is quite capable of processing and does in fact process returnable bottles, including Budweiser, Miller's, and Schlitz. It turns out their return or their deposit is 85 cents per case of 24 rather than the customary 50 cents deposit. Now, I think this particular point, which I shall endeavor to make next, is something which is at somewhat at the heart of the problem, and that is, are we really penalizing the consumer by putting on a deposit? And I should like to try to demonstrate that, in fact, we are not. Let's first of all talk about the consumer who is taking back a bottle, a returnable bottle, and let us talk in terms of cases. He is going to get 24 cents. He takes in the bottles, sells them to the retailer, gets the 24 cents. The retailer sells to the distributor, gets 50 cents. The distributor sells to the brewery and also gets 50 cents. And I believe this part of the problem is well understood. The part that I believe that there's some confusion on is that on the other side of the picture, which is the purchase part, there is identically the same relationship going on at the present time. The consumer has to pay the retailer 24 cents. The retailer does, in fact, included in the product price plus deposit, pay 50 cents. The distributor does, in fact, pay product price plus a deposit of 50 cents. If you will agree to these points, and I shall turn to the next sheet here in a moment to demonstrate that this is so. Then we can see that there is a complete wash, one for one, across here, and that even if this refund were increased to 10 cents a bottle or $2.40, that there in fact would be no difference if it were equal at every point and all returnables were returned. It would be a completely wash transaction. The dollars which come in go back, and there is no disadvantage to the consumer in any way, assuming that he takes back his bottle.
Mr. Wagner, yes. I'm going to give you at least one more minute.
All right, okay. Now, this is the basis upon which I am saying that, in fact, that price structure does include this 50 cent deposit. These are data right here, which are, in fact, all of this data for the 12-ounce can, the 11-ounce non-returnable bottle, and the 11-ounce returnable bottle are in file on the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. This is a matter of record. If we delete the 50 cents, which is in fact paid by the distributor and by the retailer, we come up with these types of markups at the various levels, and I'm not going to be able to show in the minute, but suffice to say that there is in fact a markup of 25% between brewery price and distributor price with the returnable bottle. There is in fact an 18% markup here. In other words, they do really consider that there has to be a little bit of extra money in here for handling. The same is true at the can level. There is a greater markup between these two types of beverage, and still the cost per can is 13% greater than the cost per bottle.
Let me get you off the hook on the time just for a moment. I talked to you about this the other day. I appreciate all of this, and I'll just accept that all of this is correct for Blitz and for local. How does that work with Budweiser out of St. Louis?
Okay. Now, this is, in fact, how it does happen. Right now, Budweiser out of St. Louis does pay in Oregon to the distributor, and the distributor does pay the retailer 85 cents.
You can buy Budweiser in a returnable container?
In Oregon, you bet. And I called this distributor, and the distributor which handles all three of these brands, and they said, yes, in fact, they do. I can give you price per case, and then this is all a matter of public record. There's no, and there's just no, well, that's the way it is. So, okay.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Fine.
I appreciate very much all the time and effort that you've obviously put into your presentation. I'm sorry that we do have this one.
Where's he from?
I still appreciate it, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Edgar Grimes. You've been here before.
I am Edgar Grimes of Harrisburg, Oregon, a dairyman. I have checked both sides for and against the bill. First, I want to speak a section of the bill that I am for, and that is on page 2, section 4, subsection 2, in reference to the detachable opening of the container, and that's been already explained to a certain extent. I would like to suggest that this committee make a possible added entry on that, and that's reference to the tear-off of the Polaroid film. People from the Game Commission throughout the United States and so forth have brought to my attention that they're losing many of our wild game animals due to that poisonous tear-off of the Polaroid film. I'm probably going to contradict a few statements that have been made, or maybe this is additional information. I better state it that way. At 11:40 a.m. this morning, I called Director of Litter Patrol of British Columbia, Mr. Allard, and asked him about how the program was working and so on. And he said he would just give his personal opinion that the stores were refusing to accept the returnables because they didn't have the manpower or the space to handle them. The companies were putting in the returnable warehouses, but the people were too lazy to go 10 or 15 blocks or 10 or 15 miles to make the returns. And of his own opinion, he says the brevage containers are just as plain on the streets now as it was before. So I'm just giving the information that was given to me at 11:40, and I spoke about 10 minutes to him, and he asked for a copy of our motion picture. The choice is yours to help him. I have included in here a report from our state police, and you have the letter that was to me showing that they have apprehended about 1,645 people during the last year and a half, and the average fine, if you put the value of $50 on these 108 people who went out and picked up litter ranging from 1 to 16 days, makes around about $33.93 per person. So the state police have been doing a wonderful job. I also have included a letter to the editor, and I'll quickly read a little of that. Enough litter bugs were arrested since the new litter law became effective 8/22/69 to have cleaned up 10,000 miles of Oregon roadways had the courts carried out the intent of the sponsors of the law and assigned roadside litter patrol duties and the wearing of LP armband to the convicted litter bugs instead of fines ranging from $10 to $400. In 1971, I shall support a condensed rewriting of the state's litter law to give better direction to the court, which provides for a minimum penalty, such as 2 days litter patrol work while wearing an LP armband and $50 fine to pay cost of apprehension. I have included in that material a summary that a group of judges and attorneys have made as a suggested very short litter law that would cover everything in Oregon. I will not support action which will encourage people to pick up roadside litter on a selective basis, which results in damaged or unwanted articles being thrown onto private property to injure persons, cripple or kill livestock, or damage farm equipment. I believe a convicted litter bug working one day on litter patrol duties while wearing an armband will reduce roadside litter in Oregon equal to 100 hard man days of litter pickup work. Now, I have the originals of the report from Vermont that I gave you the summary, and also Representative Gwynn has those. There is a report here from Solve on the litter enforcement with Judge Beatty as the chairman. I gave you a summary of that there in reference to those five paragraphs, which might be suggested. A litter law, which would be very condensed. I have included a report from the Keep America Beautiful Commission, the Highway Research Board of National Academy of Science, as to what they found after the roads in 29 states had been freed of litter, and then 30 days later it was picked up, and this is their count. In my 20-some years of picking up litter along the road, I would state that in my own community and around my farm, that about 80% or more have been the returnable bottles. But once a bottle hits the road, a rock, and is chipped, it no longer becomes returnable. And children and youth and good intention going out picking up such items will throw about 50% over the fence into the farmer's field. This last year, while hauling grain to the warehouse, I noticed four youth, two on each side with their used uniforms, and four bottles were going right over into the man's unharvested windrow of seed compared to every one they put in their sack. So if youths are going out to pick up litter, they must go out under supervision and pick it up 100%, everything they should pick up. Also, you're leaving an opening here for child molesters. Are these little children going to be invited to go down these lonely roads and pick up litter and then also be picked up themselves? I don't know how much time I got left. Half a minute?
About that.
In June, I was invited back to Keep America Beautiful, and I have told about the excellent work of the Oregon State Police and about the Oregon litter law. And that film, To Tell the Truth, appears at 7 o'clock once a week for a period of 52 weeks at one or more stations throughout the United States. Several copies of our film, The Choice is Yours, as well as the man from British Columbia asked this morning for me to send him a copy, have been sent throughout the United States. And just this last summer, a vice president of the First National Bank of Atlanta, Georgia, who received a copy of the film, stopped in my farm on a visit throughout the United States along with another member of the bank and wanted a copy of the law. And when I gave him a copy of the law, I also gave him a letter bag and said, hell no, Grimes, I don't need that. I put five in my car before I entered the state of Oregon. And so basically this Tell the Truth program at Gary Moore says visit Oregon, but don't litter while you're there, because it tells you if you litter, you're going to get an armband on and pick up litter. Now, since the legislators picked up the litter around my farm just exactly 2 years ago today, they picked up six sacks and a quarter of a mile, I can put in my pocket the total litter that's been thrown out there in 2 years. Many of the children in our community can tell the same thing. There's no litter around these places where people take enough interest to pick it up and let people know about it. And our neighbor made a citizen's arrest on a man who pulled off Interstate 5 and dumped his septic tank out of his house trailer. 22 months have gone by, and that's 99.9% free for a 3 mile strip there. So I know it's effective. If you take enough interest to get your own property clean, other people will do the same.
Thank you, Mr. Graham.
Okay.
Question. Representative McPherson, you say that the state police are doing a good job. It seemed to me that Captain Tishner's testimony was that in December of 1969, there were 16,000 traffic arrests made in Oregon and about 8 arrests for litter. Do you think that's a good job?
You have a complete report there for a year and a half, which shows 1,600 apprehensions. I think 300 of them, I probably got a copy right here too, 300 were warnings, and the other 1,300 and whatever it is, 46, were arrests. And they.
This is for throwing injurious substances on the highway, throwing away lighted material, which could be a cigarette.
Right.
Dumping rubbish or refuse, I suppose, anywhere along the county roads or anywhere else. Public health and sanitation, which could be any kind of a charge from dumping the effluent out of your moving trailer, or
right,
something like that, and dumping rubbish in or near the water. Now, that doesn't specifically relate to the section of the law authorizing them to arrest for litter violations on the highways as such. I'm talking about those traffic officers out there who are supposedly making arrests for litter violations on the highways.
They're doing a wonderful job. One tourist told me about a year ago, he came up from Roseburg, and he said he saw a man, wife, and three children out with their armbands on picking up litter, and a little further along he saw another man and his wife out picking up litter, and then another woman, and so on. He saw about seven different litter pickuppers in just a 1 day's trip from Roseburg up.
From your standpoint, then, they're doing a good job.
The state police are doing a wonderful job, because all we had to do, this neighbor gave me the license number of this man that emptied his septic tank. I called the state police in Eugene. In a few minutes, they had the report back and told me who the man was and so on, and they put a stakeout on his house for 6 weeks over in Bend. Just as soon as he came back off of his vacation, he was arrested. They're doing a wonderful job.
Howard. Mr. Grimes, you're a juryman. Is there any problem of the beer caps as far as cattle eating them?
I would say this, that there's not too much chance of the caps getting in the field for this reason. the material that is stored in the ditch, then when high water like rains come now...
Mr. Grant, let me interrupt a minute. That's not a fire alarm. That's the elevator. Somebody pushed the emergency button on the elevator.
Okay. In reference to livestock, I want to state this. The material is thrown into the ditches that can float. When high water comes, will float out into the field, and then as the water goes down, it seeps gently down through the ground, or you've got grass in there, which will keep it from floating back out. And then we come along with our harvesting equipment, particularly the insulate-making equipment, which is this frail cutter with these knives switching around and about a quarter of an inch off. They pick up everything. They just clean the ground. Everything goes into our insulation feed. And so I was going to say these little flippers, if you talk about tear-off, they're probably left out in the ditch and they do not float into the farmer's field.
I would think of the beer cap itself. If it got into the hay and the...
The little cap itself, I don't, unless it can float.
Yeah.
Now, there will be people who will throw things over. I've seen a lot of full bottles of beer we out in the field where people have thrown them over the fence. And so that's what I'd say. It does the livestock people more damage to have the youth out sorting through this material. But if they go out as a group under supervision and pick up everything 100%, I'll just give you an idea. They had a parade in Albany last year on litter, and I think there were 64 floats. A lot of big trucks here, 5 ton, with cans and bottles, and there wasn't a kid that asked to have a nickel or penny. It all went into solid dump. 64 floats of them.
Everything done tomorrow.
Otherwise, Linn County wouldn't have won the national award here last month.
Mr. Grimes, maybe you could clarify something for me. Are you testifying for or against the bill?
I am testifying for that section of the bill I told you in reference to the detachable tops, and also if you put in the Polaroid.
But otherwise, you're against the bill.
I'm against the value on any piece of litter that goes along the farmer's fence row because of innocent people coming out sorting it out. A bottle that is chipped can have a 50 cents returnable, but once it's chipped, then we have a great big equipment to catch the stuff that can't run on the pave and go along the side of the road and they crush up practically everything.
Representative McPherson.
So I understand your testimony then, Mr. Grimes, that you've changed your mind completely since 1969 when you testified before this same committee.
No, I never testified about any value on anything.
Well, I checked that.
I said at that time, our cattle were being killed because people were going along a road picking up items and throwing it over to the fence that they didn't want. I mentioned specifically the case where four Boy Scouts come out in a quarter of a mile where Hunter's Park. They picked up 4 sacks of returnable material, and I picked up 2 sacks of broken material that they had heaved over into the fence.
Are you a member of SOLVE?
I was the first person to donate $100 to SOLVE long before there was ever even a member of the organization. And the questions up there, the Linn County SOLVE Executive Committee, nobody has contributed in our county except myself, and I put in about $15,000. I had 113 registered dairy cattle. I'm down to 41 now.
So your answer then is that we should just pick it up?
Pick it up, 100%. When you go out, you pick up everything.
Thank you very much, Mr. Grimes. Francis Fenn.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my experience in agriculture may be somewhat different from Mr. Grimes, though we share some common experiences too. My husband and I raise sheep in Douglas County at Elkton. We support Bill 1036 and particularly the 5-cent deposit because we think it's going to take 5 cents on each bottle and can to keep them from tossing them out the window and into our fields. I'm speaking of hundreds of miles of, not that we have hundreds, but this kind of rural road in the farmlands of Oregon where it's a 2-lane road, the shoulders and ditches are close to the road, and the farmer's fence isn't far beyond. I've done systematic, regular pickup patrol in our pastures, and I occasionally see an oil can, but the rest of it is beverage containers, the bottles and the cans. My neighbors that I've contacted, several dozen of them, feel in absolute support of this same principle and of the 5 cents. They've each done their own picking up, and they all had a story to tell me of the mass of cans and bottles that they had gathered, and their dismay that in a very short time the same number of cans and bottles were again strewn along. I would like to give you just specifics on the kind of hazard to agriculture that metal and glass do cause. Perhaps Mr. Grimes has done this in the past, but some of you may not be as familiar with this sort of situation. First of all, to machinery in a pasture, a piece of a can or a bottle sucked into a combine or caught in the blades of a mower or gouged into the tire of a tractor causes expensive repairs. On the farm, you have to send away for your parts. It's often 50 or 100 miles away. Very too often, the mechanic has to come down with the parts to help you fix it up. And at worst, you have to send your machine back into your dealer. This makes for expensive repairs in the hundreds of dollars range sometimes. This doesn't count the downtime if you are stopped from your planting or your harvest because of this critical machine. At a particular time, the whole return on that particular crop is affected. The other area of hazard to livestock is probably obvious, but there are two kinds I'd like to mention. Of course, if the metal or glass is ground into the feed, as I'm often warned, we must be careful. You'll find out about that in an autopsy. But mobility for forage animals, for grazing animals, is also of great significance. An animal that has injured his foot or leg doesn't get around. His condition falls off. If you're fattening lambs, they don't make their market weight, and you've got nothing but expense from then on because those other lambs are more aggressive. And we might add, finally, with the rams, mobility is one of their major assets. One ram is responsible for 60 lambs. One crippled ram would be bad. A cluster of them that got into a pile would be a disaster in terms of your productivity that year. These are man-made hazards to agriculture, and we think that the ladies and gentlemen of the legislature can take action to, rather simply, take simple action to restrain and maybe eradicate this kind of hazard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Finn. Any questions? Representative Denhorn?
Mrs. Finn, do you view as alarming or at least undesirable the omission of this bill of other alcoholic beverages? In other words, the Senate bill has them in, this one doesn't. Do you think that would affect you in agriculture, if we pass this?
I occasionally have found a whiskey bottle, but if that were to make a real problem in passing the bill, I would prefer to leave out the hard liquor. It's soft drinks and beer cans over and over and over again.
Thank you very much. John Campbell. John Campbell here? Not here. Julia Exton. Julia Exton.
Julie Exton, Portland. I'm also here in support of House Bill 1036.
Pull that microphone up close.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm also here in support of House Bill 1036. I feel that the passage of this bill would be a step forward in our dealings with our problems of litter and solid waste, and I think solid waste being the more important problem right at the moment. We have created a disposable world, but where do we dispose of it? And if we don't do something soon, it will become a non-returnable world. I have here a good example of our litter and solid waste found on our highways and beaches. This was given to me by the Columbia Group of the Sierra Club to present to you. One of their members found this at the dunes down on the Oregon coast. I can't say how long it's been there, but you can see how the body of the can has disintegrated, but the aluminum end is still there, and it'll be with us for how many years?
And I think you, as representatives of the people of Oregon, can lead the people in this major step, and then we, in turn, will lead the nation.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Exton? No, thank
you
very
much.
Would
you like to look at that?
Pardon?
Would you like to look at that?
Yes, please. Roy Duncan. Thomas McCant. McCammon. Oh, here. Roy Duncan, pardon me.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roy Duncan. I come from Salem. I am speaking today for myself and an estimated 1,500 members of the First Congregational Church over here on 700 Northeast Marion, about a can's throw from here. Is there a problem? Well, last night, as I was trying to conjure up some facts and some statements to make today, I got to wondering, am I just accepting the other things people have said? Maybe I ought to take a look. So at midnight last night, in the rain, I took a 0.6-mile hike from my house towards Salem. I live in Clear Lake, at 6 miles north of here, and I walked 0.6 mile. Is there a problem? Well, I would have to agree with Mr. Grimes when he says the police are doing a wonderful job, because I didn't get anywhere near 0.6 mile. But in 0.6 mile, I got this. I have with me today the results of this basic research, this use of the scientific method. Remnants of 61 beverage containers. I'd say we have a problem. And incidentally, I'd like to also add that this, in my opinion, represents about 80% of the litter I saw in that 0.6-mile stretch. We have here the soft drink can. Not to be slighted, the beer can. And let me say, there are some advantages to the king size. You have to stoop over less times to pick up the same amount of weight. But for those that say the disposable can is a big problem, let me say it's not always a big problem. Sometimes it's a small problem. And not to be slighted, the glass can. Incidentally, I only found 4 glass containers out of the 61 I brought with me today. But for every one of these I brought, I would estimate there were 6 broken and in millions of pieces. Yes, I'd say we do have a problem. And from this problem, from my survey, perhaps we could draw several conclusions. We might say that the people that live in Clear Lake booze a lot. We might say that if we had a nickel a container, inasmuch as it took me 45 minutes to collect approximately 60, at a nickel container, I'm worth about $4 an hour. But I think a more important conclusion we can draw from this is that we need to do something. We all agree litter is an abomination, but an even greater problem is the waste and destruction of non-replaceable resources. The efforts of the container industry that have been mentioned by others, a 0.5 a bottle, someplace in Salem, I think, and the 90 some odd cans, and I'm not sure of which size, if it's important, for a nickel, are obvious failures. And since cans seem to be a majority of the problem, let me say, or let me ask rather, do they cause any other problems? And I think the people in Clatsop County are facing part of this problem today. They're looking at the possibility of a bauxite aluminum plant. I understand this is one of the dirtiest methods of creating aluminum and creates a lot of pollution as a side effect. And another problem, the need for additional power, nuclear power plants. We're facing one specifically today as well, Trojan. And the need would appear to be mostly justified by the need for more aluminum. Incidentally, I understand Trojan is aptly named. We all know the story of the Trojan horse. The opposition recognizes the litter problem, but they fail to recognize the fact that the world is a closed system with only limited resources. Monday, I didn't hear testify, and not yet today have I heard testify, a group who got quite a bit of press back in July of 69 called Keep Oregon Clean. I don't know if they were a committee, a club, or what, but they got a lot of press. They had, as one of the individuals who was going to select members of their board, a gentleman from the bottling industry, and they said in headlines they were going to have a budget of $50,000, going to have two employees. They called, gentlemen, for strict enforcement of laws and study of the problem. We can see the results of that. Difficult for me to understand, it's not difficult for me to understand, the resistance of the mineral owners because they want to sell their minerals, or the manufacturers because they want to manufacture, but it took me a little time to arrive at the problem of the bottler. And to me, it comes down to this. His product is going to cost more because the cost of returnables, if it is greater, is going to be passed on to us, the consumers. Therefore, now he has to compete in a different market for the consumer's dollar. We're not getting as much product, or we're paying more for the same product. Will this bill work? Well, speaking for myself, I'll be first in line for my $3.05. And speaking also for myself, as a boy, back in the Depression years, these kinds of things, before they took this shape, was one of the few sources of revenue I had. Mr. Chairman, I feel extremely pressed for time. I spent the first 15 minutes of your meeting today editing out about two-thirds of my remarks. If I could have about a minute or two to conclude.
Go ahead.
So, the question may be asked, and I think I'll ask it myself. What kind of a nut goes out at midnight in the rain and picks up litter by the road? But I don't want to answer that one. I'd rather ask another and say, what kind of nut throws the litter out there, and what kind of a nut says we've got to manufacture waste when our resources are so limited? There may be those that will try to impugn my testimony here today. They will say perhaps that my research was not scientific, or the method and the conditions were wrong. I would have to say this is true, because I didn't pick up broken bottles. I didn't crawl into the brambles, which come up very close to the road in this area. It was dark and it was rainy. I didn't tell my wife or children where I was going, and I was in a hurry to get home. And most of the area where I picked this up was right across from Terrace Green. 2 years ago, this was the home of the year, so people are probably a little more concerned in that area. I didn't count the tabs from the cans. Didn't even pick them up. And furthermore, I only picked up on one side of the road. Oh, and one final thing I shouldn't forget. I cheated a little bit. I said there were 61. I counted two wine bottle caps in that. There was nothing left of the bottles. So, it's my contention, gentlemen, I think it's everybody's contention, we're becoming a throwaway society, and the thinking man can't justify the destruction of limited resources. We can't hang our hat anymore on that adage, science will save us. people are speaking, and they're saying that regardless of the cost, we don't want any more throwaways. If this were a different type of hearing, I would submit this bag to you as the People's Exhibit A. We urge you to move this bill to the House of the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Duncan?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Howard?
Do you imagine, and you said that when you were a kid you picked up bottles and I did too. What did you get for those bottles?
I got a penny a bottle, Representative Howard.
Well,
that was back in the early 30s.
You picked them up do you imagine that if there was a 1 or 2 cent return on those bottles that you would have been able to go out last night and pick them up?
Quite frankly, sir, I have a growing family, and if it was a nickel a bottle, I think I'd do it today.
How about your children?
I know my children would because at a penny a bottle, I'm sorry. At a penny a bottle, all I can give is a subjective answer. I think they would if it was convenient. But for a nickel a bottle, the incentive is so much greater.
If it was 2 cents a bottle, would you pick them up?
Would I pick them up?
The labor negotiation.
No, I kind of like that nice round figure of a nickel.
You're hung up on the nickel.
Well, it's a single coin, you see. I can't stand pennies. You can't even use them in the parking meter anymore.
Very good answer. Further questions for Mr. Duncan?
Just
Representative McPherson.
How many of your bottles that you found were returnable?
Two returnable, two non-returnable. I thought you'd never ask.
Further questions? If not, thank you very much. Thomas McCammett. I'm sure I missed that name. I'm sorry.
My name is Tom McCammett. I'm a retired minister. I live now in Salem. I lived in other parts of the state. I have been a bird watcher since 1914. Bird watchers go more different kinds of places than other recreation type people because we go wherever the birds are, and you have different birds and kinds of birds in different kinds of places. And over the years, I've had the experience that you come to an exceptionally beautiful spot along the stream side, unless it is a public park where people pick up, are hired to pick up, it's always a mess. And I had, when we lived in Hubbard, I had the experience one day going on a birding trip. I was over close to St. Paul, and I got two flat tires on the same side of the car from the same piece of broken beer bottle that was embedded in the shoulder of the car there, of the road there. So that's the type of thing that we build up with these bottles that are strewn by the roadside. This particular year, I'm devoting all my bird study to and other nature study to one park, Jory Park, south of Salem. As I walk around the trails of this park, I occasionally get to places where there's maybe a pretty spot under the trees, which is remote from where the park employees pick up litter, and I find a pile or scattered here and there beverage cans or bottles. My experience has been, my observation has been, that it is chiefly these beverage cans and bottles that make up the offensive litter in the various places that we go. And so for these and many other reasons which have already been elaborated, I'm in favor of the passage of this bill.
Thank you very much.
Questions?
Thank you.
Bill Lochner. Irene Milan.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Irene Milan from Salem. I'm representing the Salem chapter of the Oregon Environmental Council. I am also chairman of a recycling project which is currently underway here in Salem. I hope my testimony will refute the implied claims of recent can and glass industry publicity that their current recycling programs offer the answer to the problems which House Bill 1036 seeks to solve. We and the students from three Salem High School environmental clubs with whom we are working had become concerned about the solid waste disposal and litter problems created by the throwaway containers and hoped by this project to draw the problem to the public's attention. We were hopeful that this project might also encourage the establishment of a permanent recycling project by appropriate public agencies. And incidentally, we have planned to use any profits from our endeavor to bring public attention to this piece of legislation. The operations of our project are similar to those begun by a number of environmental and fundraising groups since the industry buying of glass and aluminum was begun last year. Barrels to collect tin and aluminum cans and glass containers have been placed at service stations in town. The students collect from these twice a week and store the material. On Saturdays, they gather to sort the glass by color, to remove any metal from it, to crush it into separate bins. The aluminum is just sorted unto itself, and the tin cans, which we're now collecting, we must take the tops and bottoms off of, remove the labels, make certain they are clean, and flatten them in order to give them to American Can. The other two materials we are able to sell. The planning and implementation of this project, which has only been going on for a month, we estimate to have involved 400 volunteer hours. The barrels, the totes which we use for storage, the storage space, the publicity, the insurance, the intracity and the intercity transportation have all been donated to us to ensure that this project might be profitable. We are having what we consider an enthusiastic response. The barrels are filled quite frequently, and yet we estimate that an effort such as ours is perhaps getting at 1% of the cans and disposable bottles that are thrown away each day in Salem. And of course, a program like this has no impact whatever on the litter problem. But under the existing recycling programs, we find that operations such as ours are necessary because of the lack of well-distributed collection points and the extensive preparation which industry requires of the materials that are to be recycled. And I should point out, too, that were the transportation alone not donated to our group, this would not have been the whole project would have been a prohibitive thing to undertake. While this project then will serve our purposes of bringing the issue to the public's attention and have a modest fundraising aspect because of the donations, it has become clear to us that projects such as ours reach only the most motivated and environmentally conscious of householders, and therefore they can never be expected to solve the massive problem created by throwaways. When we began, we were under the impression that city or county run projects for recycling of household trash that have been speculated about so much in the popular press was something that we might hurry into existence here in Oregon. But all of our research into the sanitation industry activities, their publications, conversations and correspondence with governmental agencies indicate that any massive recycling of regularly collected household trash is 10 to 20 years into the future. The salvaging of recyclable materials from the dump is that far in the future due to a lack of stable markets for the material, the need for technological expertise, and sophisticated and expensive equipment, not to mention the fact that the sanitation firms have no guarantee that these expensive investments would turn out in a profitable business. Therefore, we feel that the problem of throwaway containers is not one which can be solved either by the recycling programs currently sponsored by industry, nor are we likely to see the day when household trash will be recycled publicly. We strongly urge the passage of House Bill 1036 and feel that this is the way to control the problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions, Mr. Myron? Thank you for your very thoughtful presentation. Dr. Richard Gabe. Oh, and Connie Fraser.
Yeah.
Does it go together?
All right.
My name's Connie Fraser, and I'm from Eugene, Oregon, and I'm representing the Committee Against Non-Returnables. And I simply would like to present to you over 1,300 signatures from people in the Eugene area supporting a bill which would require a 5-cent minimum deposit on beverage containers. And I just wanted to point out that when the people signed this, there was no House Bill 1036. There was only LC-217. So that's why the bill says what it does, or the petition. And I would also like to comment that this was met with a very positive response in the Eugene area. And the people were very interested. They wanted to know what was happening. They wanted to know about the bill. And everybody that signed this was 100% behind it.
Thank you. Questions? Representative McPherson.
If the legislature should fail to pass a bill like 1036, do you think there's enough sentiment among the people that you know to pass an initiative petition?
I think that if the legislature won't do it, I think the people in Eugene will do something, try to do something citywide or countywide. I think that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you'll leave that list with us.
Yeah. My name is Richard Gale. I'm also with CAN, the Committee Against Non-Returnables, which is a small coordinating group of interested people in Eugene that was formed last August to publicize the availability of beer and pop in returnable containers. We prepared a little summary survey of the stores, particularly in the university area, and in fact there is a store where you can get returnable Budweiser. When you're in Eugene, I'll make four very quick points. I think there's no question that this bill needs to be passed, that there is massive public support. I would also mention, though, an experiment that was carried out in the state of Washington in which a national forest campground was deliberately littered, was seeded with four types of litter: returnable bottles, non-returnable cans and bottles and paper bags. Completely unannounced, over one weekend, people picked up 91% of the deposit bottles, 70% of the non-deposit bottles, 46% of the cans, and 40% of the bags. This is, of course, in a state where returnable bottles are very hard to come by. Second thing I'd point out is that the employment in Oregon in the container industry is not massive. There are about 700 individuals employed in both the glass and metal can container industry. There are probably, regardless of what happens, will be declines in employment in the can industry simply because apparently it is becoming more technologically efficient. In 1966, there were 492 people employed in the canning industry. By 1969, there were only 351. So I'm not demeaning jobs, but what I am saying is that there is going to be a leveling off or even a decline in employment. But further, we also have to think of the jobs that would be created with a recycling system. Third point is that although the bottling industry claims that there would be a decline in the consumption of beer and pop if you had a deposit, recent figures have indicated that people are pretty much saturated with beer and pop. That is, the per capita consumption of beer in the United States, which is about 47 six-packs per capita per year, people only over 18, has not changed very much in the last 5 years. That's the figures are only over 18, right? Right. Furthermore, this recent article in the New York Times indicated the same thing. So if in fact there is a slight decline in the level of consumption, and I doubt that there will be, it's not that we're curtailing a massive growth industry. People are drinking just about as much beer and pop as they can take. Fourth thing, I would remind you that this is not a returnable bottle bill. This is a container recycling bill. There's a great deal of difference. This bill does not ban a one-use bottle or can. If I was walking along the highway and I picked up a one-way bottle, I mean a bottle where there's a non-reusable bottle, I could take it back and get my 5 cents back. If the returnable bottle that I picked up was chipped and perhaps couldn't be used again, I would still get my 5 cents back. It is not a returnable bottle bill. It's a container recycling bill. Therefore, it would fit in very well with the current efforts of industry to encourage us to recycle. This bill is a recycler's dream because it would make sure that all of the beverage and pop containers come back to that central point. I think the real critical question is how much of an economic incentive is there? And industry thus far simply has not been able to pass along enough of that incentive to us. I'll show you for the third time today this particular ad. This ad was put in American by American Can, saying that, you know, send the cans, anything back to us, we'll ship it to our can manufacturing plant, and we'll give the money to charity. The money per carload is about $200 to $300. The cost of this ad in the Eugene Register Guard is the equivalent of three carloads, the money that they would give to charity from three carloads of beer, pop, and other containers. Simply, would a church group think, for example, it was worth $300 to engage in the effort to pick up one railroad car full of metal containers? I don't think so. Further, of course, Lucky Lager is paying one penny per deposit, but for every page ad they put in the Eugene Register Guard, that is as much cost to them as paying 60,000 people to bring back one bottle per. So I think that it is a recycling bill. It is not a returnable bottle bill. It passes the incentive on to the consumer. And I think it should be.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Gale? Dr. Gale, pardon me.
Doctor, on the question of jobs, are you aware of the United States Department of Commerce's report on the effect of non-returnables on the brewing industry and on the soft drink industry?
No, I'm not.
The one that talks about the reduction in the number because of non-returnables? I don't suppose you... The question's been raised many times about what the effect on jobs would be, and we think about it on a sort of a parochial level instead of on what it would be, what the non-returnable is doing nationwide. And I understand that, for example, Miller Brewing Company and the 7-Up Bottling Company distribute approximately the same volume on a national basis. Miller does it from about 3 breweries, and 7-Up Company does it from about 487 franchise bottlers. In the September issue of Outlook, which is a publication of Owens, Illinois, producer of glass bottles, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you recognize, they said one of the nation's biggest soft drink manufacturers has more than 1,000 local bottling plants today, and I don't know whether they were referring to 7-Up or not, but the officials predict that if the trend continues in non-returnables, that in the next 10 years they will have less than 100 serving the country, because they can do it with, you see, instead of recycling within an area, a franchise area, they can do it from these 100 plants with non-returnables one way, no recycling involved. Mm-hmm. Would you agree that that would have also a great impact upon employment across the country?
Yes, I would. So I think the point I was simply trying to make is that when in the state of Washington, for example, the argument was essentially that if every job that wasn't tied with Boeing was tied with the glass container industry, and it simply, it is an industry, it does employ people in Oregon, but putting through this kind of thing is not going to destroy an industry. Even if, for example, at Owens, Illinois plant in Portland, let's say that all the people who were employed in making one-way bottles for beverage containers were thrown out of work. That essentially would be 20%. Let's say that the employment rate was the same as the distribution production, talking about 60 or 70 or 80 people. Now, it's hard, I agree, to think about some poor guy being thrown out of work, but I'm also saying let's take a look at the total picture and look at the jobs that would be created in an efficient recycling system. Let's not forget the fact that I don't think you're going to have a dramatic decline in consumption.
Another question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
From the same study by the Department of Commerce, if there is a correspondent decline in the output of non-returnables and we go to returnables, it's my understanding that industry claims it will cause from additional need of one quarter to one half a man in these supermarkets. So while we take it away, we give it back on the other hand if their claims are correct.
Yes, precisely.
Further questions?
Thank you very much, Doctor. Sid King.
Chairman, my name is Sid King. I represent the Automobile Club, the AAA office of Portland. I have left the statement I have here with you. Part of the things I plan to say have already been mentioned by Representatives Hanneman and McPherson regarding our polls. So I will simply say that as a result of the polls we have taken, we believe our membership is favorable to this type of legislation. So our club is favorable to it. We hope you will pass the bill because we think that it will enable us to leave our present effluent society and return to Mr. Buckley's affluent society. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. King. Questions? Thank you.
Just one question.
Go ahead. Representative McPherson.
How many people does your club represent?
We have slightly more than 110,000 at the present time.
And in Oregon?
It's all in Oregon. We only operate in Oregon.
Thank you. Mary Ann Donnell. Donnell.
Mrs. Donnell had to return to Portland. She asked me to present her testimony.
All right.
My name is Rose Rocky. And this testimony is from Mary Ann Donnell, 1240 Southwest Hillcroft, Portland. In my experience as a citizen and member of a Speaker's Bureau for a Southwest Portland environmental group, I have found that the public is ready and willing to assume the responsibility for supporting deposits on malt and non-alcoholic beverage containers. In the year's time during which I have been speaking to PTAs, church groups, garden clubs, and informal coffees in homes, I would estimate that 75% of the audience has indicated a willingness to take this responsibility for the care of the environment in this way. Even the school-aged citizen can see that litter is a solid waste spread out. The 5-cent deposit can provide the incentive which will encourage a habit. They see this not only as a method for improving the visual blight along the roads and highways, but as a way to keep resources in circulation without unnecessary reprocessing. Contrary to this morning's Argonian cartoon, this is not so much a burden on the consumer, since it is a deposit and not a tax, but rather a method for him to show he is ready to accept his responsibility in everyday living. It is this awareness which is the first step in actively caring for the environmental problems we face today.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it if you leave a statement over there. We'll keep it for the record. Joan Wright, Reitz. Not here. Nell Rand.
Good
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think due to the lateness of the hour, I'm not going to read my testimony. I'm here representing today the YWCA of Portland. We have a membership of 15,000 people in Portland. We have been following House Bill 1036 all the way through from its beginning, and we're wholeheartedly in support of it. We would not like to see it amended. We like it the way it is. If any amendments would be made, I would like to say we would favor an increase in the amount of deposit rather than a decrease. When I was a little girl picking up bottles, the going rate was 2 cents a bottle. And I think with today's inflation, that would probably equal about today's 10 cents. So I think 5 cents should be the very least amount considered to get these bottles and cans back. Mr. Grimes made the statement that these bottles that had chips in them did not have any value. I wonder if maybe they wouldn't have a little more value in a central depot rather than laying around the sides of the road. It seems to me they could be recycled for something, or if not recycled, they would still be better off in a central place rather than out on the sides of the road. As I said, I'm not going to read this, and that's all I have to say. My organization is strongly in support of this bill, and we hope it passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rand. Questions? Thank you. Randy Rancourt. Jerry Powell.
My name is Jerry Powell. I'm a student at Portland State University. I'm a citizen of Portland. In a sense, Representative McPherson has spoke to one issue which is important, I think, and that is an employment in this area. In a sense, I'm an employed in this area, and if House Bill 1036 is passed, I will be put out of business. I plead with you to put me out of business. I'm presently run a recycling operation in the University area of Portland. According to Owens, Illinois, we run the largest non-voluntary, non-profit organization. I'm in it for the corporation I work for, Portland Student Services, which operates 9 apartment houses in the university area. We do it with students. We do it with everything. Plaid Pantry, we work in assistance with them. We work in assistance with taverns. Students bring garbage to us. We recycle not only glass, but we recycle paper and everything else. Majority of my volume, the majority of the way I lose money, and I lose money every hour I work in this fund operation, for every pound of glass I touch, I lose as much as the income I get. The glass that we get is the major source of our income. It's the only way that we look a little bit good, and 80% of my volume is on the products which will be applicable to this bill. I think that the recycling programs, as the National Solid Waste Management Association has said, refuse reclamation and recycling techniques are unworkable and economically unfeasible. My operation proves it. It is not feasible. And I think that your points about the economics of this issue are important, but I hope that you will put me out of business. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Powell? Thank you very much. Kirk Richardson. Kessler Cannon. That's the list that signed up. Are there any of others here who would like to testify at this time? We're going to have subsequent hearing on the bill within the next 10 days. There being none, we stand adjourned.